Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine. Tonight we're going to have our special guest, Bruce Coker, who's running for state senate in Northwest Georgia, talk about some national and some local politics with both Catherine Smith and Tim Shiflett. Welcome.
Hello.
Good evening.
Yes, well, good to have the team back. I believe this will be the first time in 3 weeks that we've all been on here together.
Wow.
I think that's right.
Yeah, changing it around some. But it's good to have us all together to talk about things as it really hits the prime political season. I mean, they talk about Labor Day and the convention's ending, but when debates start, you really know you're in a political season, truly. And that's what we had finally happen on a Friday night. Probably go ahead and let's just go ahead and talk about that right off the bat. The debate that happened. I guess we have another one coming Thursday. Catherine, your initial impressions of the debate?
Well, I thought that, of course, you know, I'm a Obama fan, so I thought he did well. I didn't think either of them got, you know, home runs, but I thought that Barack Obama seemed very presidential. I thought he did well with the questions. He seemed prepared. He did talk a little bit too long on some of the answers, and I found it frustrating that both of them seemed unable to answer the questions at times. But that always happens in the debates. I thought that Senator McCain looked tired and a little bit frustrated and not as well prepared as Senator Obama.
Yes, Tim, your initial thoughts.
It looked to me like Obama came out of the gate really strong on the economic stuff. McCain, not so much. McCain got his legs under him later in the debate when they were talking about foreign policy, and he could throw around facts and figures and tell little stories and stuff. The debate seemed to me pretty much a wash, maybe with a slight advantage to Obama, which is really bad news for McCain, David. Foreign policy is supposed to be his strong suit. Senator McCain has had a bad couple of weeks, ending with Friday night. He wasn't prepared for that debate. You could tell it, and he blew it again.
Yes, I mean, it really, somebody said, hey, that debate was a draw, I wouldn't argue with him. But the thing is McCain needed that for several reasons. I mean, to use one sports analogy, it's like trading touchdowns, but you're behind. You didn't catch up any and the clock ran down. Another factor to think about is thinking about an Olympic relay race, if you will. He's about to hand the baton off to Sarah Palin against Joe Biden. He kind of needed to give her a lead, if you will, in the debates, and that certainly didn't happen. And then people did feel that Obama won. I think some of that may have been more on temperament, more so than just on the actual, if somebody was classically scoring the debate. And one controversy that's starting to grow, I don't know how much he'll get, but apparently under his breath at one point, Senator McCain used profanity, which is going to then lead into...
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
Yes, a Georgia Democrat, I'll just put it that way, she forwarded me an email with a YouTube, and under his breath he says, horse, S-H-I-T, and I try to tag this show as family friendly, so I won't say that out. But it's very, very low, but it's getting out there. If you just Google McCain and that term, it was in response to the Spain question is when he said it. And he did say it under his breath, but that's what it is. It's showing that even in public he has trouble controlling that temper. But it's just another, you know, it's where McCain had to do well, and he didn't, you know, hit a home run, if you will. it was kind of like back in 2004, Kerry had to do well against George Bush, and he did, and that closed the race back up. It just didn't happen this time, and the polls, they showed independent, Obama's answers more. Now, they did say that the debate audience was heavily Democratic, which was interesting, it being a Friday night, and Obama not polling as well on Friday and Saturday night.
Interestingly, David, another proof in the pudding moment is when you look at the national tracking polls that are now released daily on the horse race itself over the weekend. Obama continues a trend of the vote moving toward him. The debate did not affect that in any way today, and Rasmussen is a +6, and then Gallup a +8. McCain couldn't stop the bleeding.
Yes, I believe Politico uses that same Gallup tracking, and it has +8. Daily Kos, actually, I think, is a little bit more conservative on their lead, and they have it at a 7, which they use Research 2000. I've been impressed by that. By the way, the first time I saw that Daily Kos was doing tracking polls, I guess you kind of thought, well, maybe these are going to be a little more sunny news for us. But I've been following them every day. I check that along with Politico and some other ones, and it's been pretty consistent. I don't think there's no bias that I can see.
Actually, the Republicans, the Republicans in the blogosphere that I've been seeing on the national blogs have been complaining more about Gallup than about anyone else. But Gallup and Rasmussen are pretty close, and you know Scott Rasmussen is a Republican. So
yeah.
They got to know, you know, they got to know.
Well, I mean, there's ways to work a poll, but, you know, if you just make your universe and you show who your universe is, which Daily Kos does give their internals, you take away one of the best ways you can to work a poll, and that's
right.
To take a bad sample.
Right.
But now, we were talking about, you know, some of these debate and the follow-up. One thing I just really I notice is they have these groups of undecided voters, and these folks are so fun. There was one little fellow from CNN that they had in their little group in Ohio, and he said, yes, I just didn't like all the back and forth, all the arguing and the point and counterpoint, and I just didn't like a lot of that. I'm sitting there going, so he didn't like debating at the debate.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And what's so sad is these are the people that are going to decide the election. The people that don't like the debating at the debate. I mean, these are the folks that we have to worry and watch. And the Republicans do, too, the hardcore Republicans. They have to watch these folks, too, these fickle folks that they like everything they hear. I mean, it's just – it's you begin to wonder.
You know, I was thinking of some little nuances, though, that people mention – little negative things. Did you guys notice that McCain simply refused to look at Obama? And people finally noticed that. When he would address him, he would turn toward the audience or something as if he wasn't there, but Obama would turn and face John McCain when he was talking to him in those 5 minutes back and forth. People noticed that. That was a mistake McCain made. He shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, they mentioned two social etiquette issues, one for each. One was McCain would never look at Senator Obama, and then also the way that Senator Obama would refer to Senator McCain as John, they said in debate,
well,
that doesn't happen. I mean, I haven't gone back.
You know, it does
debate,
happen.
But
it does happen. You can look at a lot of past presidential debates and these people calling each other by their first name.
Yeah, some lady on CNN was mentioning that, and I can't recall every debate that's happened and knowing. And then you got to think, was it strategic? Was it saying, hey, I'm worried about being seen as too young, and so if I call him by his first name, that will close the age gap in my favor? Or could it be that he should have, you know, said Senator McCain, making McCain seem older? It's just, maybe in some ways a tactical. Because I don't think they're friends, even though there are Democrats and Republicans up in the Senate and House that are friends. I don't think they are. I believe we're ready to welcome our guest, Mr. Coker. How you doing?
Doing fine, David. Good to be on your show tonight.
Yeah, welcome to the Kudzu Vine. I was up in your district actually twice in the last, say, 3 weeks, and I saw some of your advertising both times, so I can tell you're out there campaigning hard.
Yeah, those very bold signs lining the highways, yes.
Yeah,
it's I've been very busy getting the name and getting the message out there. It's a process, and I enjoy doing it, though. It's a lot of fun.
Yes, well, you're on here also, obviously, with Tim Shiflett, who you've been working with closely, being in his district, and Catherine Smith from down in Atlanta.
Thank you for joining us tonight.
Good evening, Bruce.
Thank you.
Yes, well, Bruce, usually one of the first questions I like to ask folks is just tell us a little about yourself, a little biography, if you will.
Okay. Well, I've lived here in the Lafayette area most of my life. I was born here and raised here, and I reside here with my wife, Danita. We've been married for 23 years. I have 3 sons, two of them on earth and one in heaven. I had a son die at age 7 of a rare genetic disorder. But I'm a deputy sheriff with Walker County. I'm involved in numerous service organizations in and around my community, and running for public office just as a higher level of servitude. Are you still there?
Yes, I am. Just don't want to get
off. I'm sorry. I heard a silence, and I'm calling on a cell phone, and whenever I hear that silence, like it, I think I've been disconnected, but sorry about that.
Just listening to you.
Okay. Right now, I tell you, I'm really dissatisfied with what's going on with, especially just recently with our governor taking off to Europe with his entourage, especially in the face of being called back to the state capitol. Senate Minority Leader Robert Brown, House Minority Leader Dubose Porter urged the governor to postpone this trip to call together the House and Senate in a special session, as you know, and to try to straighten out some of this hemorrhaging that we're doing in our local economy. We got gas, it's $4 a gallon, and if you can find it. Groceries going up constantly, cuts in our law enforcement, our prison system, with more coming, by the way, cuts in our education system, winter coming on, and our elderly not knowing how they're going to pay for their heating fuels. And all these complex problems are plaguing us, and they're down there or over in Europe, kicking up their heels and enjoying a luxurious vacation, at least the way I see it. And, I just hope the people can see exactly what's going on with our present administration.
It sounds like you got a lot of passion. And one of the questions we usually ask is, why don't you get in this race? And you've been giving us some of that. Well, I'm going to go ahead and pass it to Tim, being that he lives in the district and knows some of the concerns. He can target some of those questions.
Sure. Bruce, as you go around the district campaigning, you've touched on this a little bit, but do you find that this year, more than 2 years ago, the first time you ran, that the economy is probably the overwhelming issue on the voters' minds?
Absolutely, Tim. There's not a question about that. We have seen a massive exodus of manufacturing in our area. We have seen retail businesses going out of business and relocating because they just can't make it in this area anymore. And we're wondering whenever the bleeding is going to stop. You know, and we've been seeing this constantly for the past 8 years. And just in my area, I can count 8 manufacturing jobs that have closed their doors. And I can count well over 40 retail establishments that have left the area or closed down indefinitely. And with all these problems with our economy, people are starting to really worry if we're going to be able to pull out of this. You know, and we hear stories about the this high-speed rail that they're wanting to spend, you know, $10 to $12 billion on from Atlanta to Chattanooga, and I'm wondering what it's going to do for North Georgia, seeing that we're going to have to pay for this thing. You know, they keep telling us that it's going to be attractive to Volkswagen, and it's going to bring in all this economic prosperity, but yet it's going to bypass the 53rd district, and the way they talk, it's not going to stop but like 2 or 3 times along the way to maintain a swift commute. And you know, most definitely, Tim, the problem we have here the most is our economy. And we've got to stop the bleeding. We've got to get down to business and start putting money in the right areas.
Now when you mentioned the 53rd district, I'd like for you to do something for me right now. We have listeners all over the state, and indeed around the world wide web. Would you give a quick description of where your district is, what cities are in it, and the political lay of the land up there for us, please?
Sure, Tim. The 53rd district consists of Chattooga County, Walker County, Dade County, and it's going to be almost all of Catoosa County, which is Walker and Catoosa County join up at the Tennessee border. And Catoosa County being the only county that we've got that has a major interstate running through it. So Catoosa is more economically sitting in the economically sound for industry to come in because of its position to the interstate system. But, you know, the other counties that we have, we do have one county, Dade County, that has I-59 running through it. But we need connections to these interstates to bring about commerce. There's a lot of things that we can start planning and looking forward to bring about economic development.
Okay. And I have one more question for you, and then I'm going to pass it over to Catherine.
Okay.
We've talked about this a little bit. You know, this is the first time probably that you and I in our lifetimes have ever seen such a heavy presence from a national campaign in our area. How do you feel that the work that the Obama campaign has done in this area might impact a race like yours?
I tell you, Tim, I've never seen anything like this before in my life in this area, and I grew up in this area. It is seldom that we ever get to even see a presidential campaign sign. You know, we see everything on TV, and it's never that we get hands-on type things happening in our district, in our area. And the Obama campaign is phenomenal. Everywhere I go, there's young people out registering people to vote. I was just recently up at Catoosa County at a parade and event that it's a yearly event that there was probably 4,000 to 5,000 people there. And the Obama people were out there with clipboards and registration forms going through the audience, finding people that have not registered and registering them to vote. And I tell you, I've never seen that before up here, and it's quite impressive. So, yes, naturally, I think that's going to help my campaign dramatically if all these people get out and vote, that they're registering to vote. And I understand they've got quite a bit nationally. I think I heard some numbers the other day that were quite astounding.
Yeah, it is something to see. Catherine.
Well, thank you very much for being on with us tonight, Bruce. We really appreciate it. I know how demanding your schedule is, so we appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your Sunday evening to spend with us. I looked over your website, and I'm always happy to see Democrats step up and run for office. I think it's terrific, and I'm very pleased by it. I do have one question about something I found on your website. I just want a little clarification on it. You talk about a little bit about immigration, and you say that you support deporting immigrants who have come here illegally. And I don't argue that point with you. However, most of them are employed by employers who are also breaking the law. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what you think those penalties should be to the employers who are employing these workers, because I think, one thing I always say is they wouldn't come here if they couldn't get work.
Catherine, that's an excellent point, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I really need to elaborate more on the website concerning that. I'm a deputy sheriff here in Walker County, and, I don't see an enormous amount of illegal immigrants here because we don't have the industry that draws them. And quite honestly, it's always the industry, the magnet that draws the problem that's really the basis of the problem. Dalton with the carpet manufacturer that's drawing these immigrants in. I mean, they're coming to work, just as you aptly put it. It's and you can't blame them, but yes, I do think that we need to really punish those people who continually, willfully break the law in bringing these illegal immigrants in and letting them fly under the radar and not paying their fair share, as all of us expect that they should.
Right. As a small business owner, I always say, they have an unfair advantage on those of us who follow the laws and pay the taxes and pay the workman's compensation insurance and, take care of our employees. So I think it's important for everyone to remember that. I think it's easy for us to say, they shouldn't be here. I don't argue you that point. But I do think that the employers who bring them here, or at least encourage them to come and pay them, below average salaries and wages, are hurting our economy as well.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And quite honestly, they don't give us a way by which we can handle this problem adequately. If we were to go load up, like one of our local, we've got a pallet shop north of the county that hires them from time to time, and we have to go load them up from time to time. But you see them back out on the streets in no time at all, because if they're not felons, they won't deport them. And if they're not giving us a way by which we can deport them, because the sheriff is not going to sit around and feed them and medicate them and everything that out of our taxes until we've got a way that we can pay for having them deported. You know what I mean? And so we've got to get to the point where if the federal government is not going to be helping us with this problem, then we need to be looking for other ways to solve the problem, because they're already here and they're everywhere in every facet of life. And it's not an easy problem to deal with. But on my website, I did, because I deal with that issue everywhere I go. People want to know how I stand on illegal immigration. And if you'll get browbeat if you take the position that, well, yeah, I think that that they need to be given some kind of amnesty. Well, you can't say that. I can't say that because it's not right. So, you know, I've got to come up with a good reason why we should allow them to stay here. If we can work toward getting them legal, the ones that are trying to get legal, I think we're working in the right direction. But the ones that the people that are hiring these illegals are the ones that should be they're the ones we should hold the feet to the fire.
I agree with you. I also always like to ask how things are going in the district and what people are. So people are talking about immigration and the economy. Are there any other issues that seem to be hot on people's minds?
Well, education, as you know, in North Georgia, I don't know whether you've seen, well, on my website, I talk about it some, about the high dropout rate. We have got enormous dropout rate, and there's a lot of things that that are factors in that. The social economic system that we have here is conducive to the problems that we have, and I think we need to really sit down and figure out what it's going to take to get our education system the best it can be. Get rid of this No Child Left Behind garbage that we've been dealing with for so long. And
praise the Lord on that.
Get back to the basics of education and letting the teachers teach what they know to teach. And if we can do that, I think we can get better schools, better education system, and I think we'll start attracting manufacturers at that point because they're not going to come to an area that they can't draw a competent workforce from. And I think that's first and foremost the thing that we need to do is improve our education system.
Well, thank you very much, David.
Yes, Bruce.
David.
Go ahead.
May I jump in with
sure
one
thing.
More question, please?
You very well, may.
This is a kind of tough one. Bruce and I have discussed this, and I want him to elaborate on it a little bit because it's something that concerns me. Bruce, as we talked about yesterday, two of the papers, newspapers, print media in your district are the Catoosa County News and the Walker County Messenger are owned by the same company that owns the Rome News Tribune down in Rome. And you have expressed a little frustration about getting some press releases and things published. Do you believe that there is a print media bias in your district in favor of Jeff Mullis?
Well, listen, Tim, I won't hesitate at all to answer that question. There is definitely a presence there, and I have to fight for everything that I get. I just was recently endorsed by 40,000 educators, which would be news to anybody's standards.
Right.
You know, and I thought that whenever I got that news to them, they would print it in bold letters, maybe even on the front page. You know, I had envisioned that they would go that far because it's that important, especially to our area. And I couldn't even get them to print it. And through arguing with them quite extensively, I finally got them to agree to run just a small version of it, and they buried it, of course, into the middle of the paper. And it's a constant fight every time I go down there try to get something printed. Jeff Mullis, they've got a I guess they just send stuff all the time that it winds up on the front page of the paper. Sometimes it takes up a whole section of the paper. So it's quite obvious whenever you look at it how they're favoring the parties, and I'm put out by that. I really am, and they should not be showing favoritism, and it's just too clear to see. Anybody around here can tell you, and a lot of people have just quit buying the newspaper just because of that very fact, and you know, and they're a very powerful entity, and if we can't get to a fairness, I don't know how we're going to get a balancing government. I really don't, if we don't start trying to be fair about these things.
And there you are.
You're right. you're right. I mean, I don't know how Rome and Catoosa are, but I know how it is here in Walker County. And I had begged the Somerville News people. They're leaving. The people on the Somerville News, the Espies. I had begged them to try to buy the paper out because they print news down there, and I took the same endorsement down there, and he printed the whole thing. He didn't have any reluctance at all printing it, you appreciate that about someone whenever you're trying to run a political race.
Yes,
thank you for that. Thank you for that honest answer.
Oh yes. And that is amazing that a business that sees people buy political ad after political ad in small town papers won't cover it, because then if what happens is if they don't print news about a political campaign, and really you have to have both sides to have a true campaign to make it seem as competition, then therefore people are going to stop reading the paper political news, and people aren't going to advertise in there. They don't really look long-term, and I will tell you this. I don't want to bore you with too much, but when the Rome Braves were coming to town, I actually worked on the campaign to help them come here, and the paper initially started out against it. And I was with a group of folks, and I said, well, you realize that when they play, you can actually cover those games in your paper, and it'll give you content, and then, of course, there'll be ads to sell from that and everything else. And they were like, wait, this could be money for us? And I don't think sometimes understand, they don't get the big picture sometimes. It's amazing to me, somebody that's never worked in the newspaper business understands potential revenue better than they do sometimes.
David, I just the other day, I went down and had a discussion with the editor of our local paper, and I wanted to know why he allowed his writer to put a story in there. It had Jeff Mullis, my opponent, in there, arm in arm with John McCain, and it had all these things in there that John McCain was saying about him. Well, that was an insult to all of our integrities around it that was reading this nonsense, because and I told him, I said, look, I know better than this. I said, this man is running for the president of the United States. He's not going to take time out of his busy schedule to write some hillbilly newspaper and sing the praises of a local candidate. That's just not going to happen. And I said, you're insulting my integrity by doing that, and these people out here don't know any better. And, I caught him off guard with it, of course. And he said, well, I said, did you hear John McCain say that? He said, no, they sent the press release to us and we printed it. I said, so you really don't know what John McCain said then, do you? So we had that discussion, and it's not fair. It's not fair the way they go about, because they're not going to print something that I sent in there that someone else said about me. I mean, it doesn't make any sense why they would do that. But there again, we are talking about partisan politics here, and it even shows up in local newspapers.
Oh, yes. I had one more question for you before I give you the final question, which is always a good question for everybody. You're in law enforcement. What's the one thing that the state government's not doing that they could do to make crime go down in the state of Georgia?
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you something. Whenever we started getting eat up with this methamphetamine problem, I went and got myself educated on clandestine laboratories and everything that's associated with it. And I've got extensive training on it, and we were begging for a bill we saw Oklahoma's bill that saw methamphetamine laboratories fall to nothing. And what they did was they introduced legislation that would make pseudoephedrine or ephedrine products only disseminated by licensed pharmacists. And by doing that, there's checks and balances about who's getting it and how much they're getting, because if you go to one pharmacy and get the product and try to go to another pharmacy and get there's a computer networking, and there's checks and balances on who's getting what and how much they're getting. And they went down there and they allowed the lobbyists, the special interests, the big pharmaceutical lobbyists and everything to water that bill down to the point that it didn't have any resemblance of what it started out to be. Well, I was furious about this. They passed that bill just saying, well, we're just going to take the product off the shelf and put it behind the counter. That way we're... And with nobody to check, they didn't even know who was going to be checking on this to make sure that they were doing what they were going to do. But now you got Susie, friend of meth cook, it's sitting behind the counter selling the stuff to Joe Cook, and the problem is still out there. It's probably not as enhanced as it once was. But if we can get a control on this methamphetamine problem, decrease the crime rate by a significant margin with all the thefts that we have, and we're getting eat up with copper and metal thefts right now. It's unbelievable, and partly because they've got to support their habit, and the methamphetamine labs are coming back. I mean, you got high school dropouts out here posing as chemists, and that's a scary thought.
Yes, it's amazing how different parts of Atlanta can seem, but how really the same problems and the same things are happening across the state. We had a candidate that's going to be in the state house, Rashad Taylor. He told us, and it was really one of my first encounters with the copper theft in inner city Atlanta. And now you're from Northwest Georgia in the mountain area talking about copper thefts. And I have a feeling if we talked to somebody from rural South Georgia, the flatlands, we'd hear about copper thefts. And the same problems are across the state because we're really not as different as we think.
Yeah, well, that's very true. It's happening all over.
Yes. Well, Mr. Coker, we always like to leave our guests that are running for office with this question. If anybody, if you needed somebody to help you in your campaign and somebody was so inclined, what are the ways they could do that?
Well, you know, I'm running up against a 8-year incumbent that the last time I checked has got $217,000 in his war chest. And I don't know exactly how he's going to come at me the last couple of weeks before the election. The last time we ran, he hit me pretty hard with some scathing material that fell in discontent with a lot of different people, and I think it's going to hurt him this time, incidentally. But I don't know how he's going to come at me, but he's got plenty of money to do so. I'm running on a very meager budget that I recycled my old signs. I put up the same signs I had in 2006. I've got two billboard vinyls that I draped over a couple of tractor-trailer trailers and put them in strategic areas in my district. And I'm trying to be as economically sound with this as I possibly can, and every dime I get comes from my constituents in my senatorial district. Only less than 3% of the money that he's got in his war chest comes from his senatorial district. The rest of it comes outside the district, outside the state, and some of it even outside the United States. And with that in mind, you know, it's difficult to run against somebody with this kind of money and this kind of pipeline of money. We all know that it takes a lot of money to run a campaign. So money, yeah, is important. But, you know, I'm getting together a group of volunteers to do phone banking. I'm getting together a group of volunteers to do some canvassing the whole month of October. So if anybody out there under the sound of my voice would like to involve themselves in some canvassing or phone banking, I would invite you to get on my website, CokerForSenator.com, or you can call me at my home at 423-718-7651, and I'll get you involved in a program that I think is going to be very successful.
Yes. Well, thank you, sir, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was indeed a pleasure.
Good night, Bruce.
Thank you.
Good night.
Well, Tim, you are lucky to be able to cast your vote from such a knowledgeable and kind of on fire individual for running for office.
I got to be honest with you, David. Let me put my bias aside and state the truth. He is an outstanding candidate, and the people of this district are lucky to have him as a candidate.
Yeah, and I guess it's being a second time he's run. He's learned some, you know, got some experience, and like I said, he's able to recycle signs. And in some ways, that it didn't have the advantages of incumbency, but it does have some advantages that come with it, if you will.
Yeah. Well, all over the state, I guess a lot of our candidates are facing this against these Republican incumbents, David. You know, the state Republican Party and people like Eric Johnson throwing checks around everywhere, they do have a very decided cash advantage. You and Catherine being on the state committee, you see those numbers. And you can attest to that better than I can. So we really are swimming upstream against the mountain of money they're throwing at us, aren't we?
Yeah. Yes, and Scott Aikman, the chair, was over at my house earlier today, past guest, and he was looking at some of the disclosures that were coming in, and he was just absolutely amazed at the discrepancy in some of the districts. And we're talking about, you know, I noticed Bruce had mentioned he didn't know it was going to get thrown at him. I found something very interesting. I've gotten three pieces in my state house district in support of the Republican incumbent from her campaign. And the third one really grabbed me. The whole theme of it, well, there is on the one side is it's a very stock piece with some green chalkboard, which is probably in a tenth of the schools in America now with all of them having dry erase boards, so it's really with the times. But then on the back, it has more of the content. And I will say the photography is very good on these. I mean, she's a very photogenic lady, Katie Dempsey, and her family. But it really is interesting how it said it's line after line of she stood against people and those, even her own party, when they wanted to cut funding for schools. Something about water, something about homestead exemption. And it's all about how she stood up against her party, which I thought that was interesting. It sounds like her party is not very popular in the district when she polled it. And so I thought that was very telling that she is trying to run away from the Republicans. Isn't that a good thing to see, since we've seen so much of the opposite, if you will? But go ahead, Tim.
I was going to ask you, you know, you are in the an area where probably the top House district race in the state is occurring. What's your take on that race between her and Dr. Puckett and how it's going down there?
Well, I think Dr. Puckett's, you know, he's a second-time candidate, and he's getting to work really hard. And he's got a good team. I will say this, I don't see the money going into the race, so that tells me that, Jane Kidd came up, DuBose Porter's come up. I mean, everybody's given a lot of support as far as the, a moral support may be underwhelming the situation, but there's not been a lot of financial support. I haven't seen a single piece go out and for Dr. Puckett's campaign, although I will say that could be a tactical decision. Maybe they look at me and they said, hey, we got this guy. If we don't have this guy, we'll never win the race. I mean, and I don't mean like there's, you know, individually looking at each voter going, oh, I know David, but somebody that votes with my track record of voting in the Democratic primary. So maybe they're targeting more swing voters But I just don't see the support financially. You know, and everything I hear that this is one of the top, you know, five targeted districts in the legislature.
Well,
yeah,
I don't think they have any money.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Does the state party have the money to even put in it?
And it may not be the state party's job to do it so much as it would be the legislative caucus.
Well, I don't think they have any money either.
Exactly. Or is it one of these groups, the Trial Lawyers Association? I mean, you'd think somebody would get together with some, you know, pool of money and the very, very targeted races, put something there. But I guess,
well, I don't know. You know, at you know, $50 million a month, you know, Senator Obama, bless his heart, is taking a lot of money from a lot of people.
Well,
honestly,
and I will say this: I do think that there's going to be some real benefit to his campaign. So,
I hope
are going to come out to support him that wouldn't come out for other candidates. And as long as everybody votes down the ballot, you know, rising tide's going to lift all boats. And then I do have a funny feeling a lot of these folks that are giving big time contributions wouldn't give a dime to some other races. So it is a tricky situation.
Yeah, we've asked that question of people. I think we asked Bobby Kahn that when he was on a couple months ago. You know, does having a dynamic presidential candidate help? You know, does it loosen up everybody's pocketbook for all Democrats? Or does it, you know, tighten up the pockets for, you know, other Democrats? And I think
yes.
We decided it was kind of a draw.
And really what needs to happen then is if let's say I had $1,000 to fall in my bank account that had to be tagged towards political giving, then, I mean, there's nothing against the presidential campaign, but I would then give it somewhere else because I understand the full game, if you will. I understand
that
$1,000 would go more towards a state house campaign, more towards a congressional campaign, a PSC campaign for that matter.
Well, I'm right there with you on that. For the last couple of years, I haven't really given any to any federal candidates. I've been giving it to local candidates because I think, you know, I believe they're their future, but also everybody seems to do okay without my money.
Let me jump in with another question then and approach this from another angle. Now, we're a small county up here, but we have a pretty vibrant party and a great track record of success, and we've got a little money. And so we have given donations this year to multiple candidates, both at the local and at the congressional level. I was wondering about the other county parties. Are they giving some donations?
We are not in Fulton. We made a decision, I guess, two cycles ago. What we're doing is we're working on this Don't Wait, No Wait campaign. We're contributing a lot of, we're spending a lot of money on printed video, or printed television and radio commercials to promote early voting and advance voting and absentee voting. And we're, you know, doing a big campaign for that, but we're not giving any money directly to candidates.
Now that would make perfect sense in a huge metro district like yours, Catherine, where media and advertising, for instance, would just be everything, the lifeblood of these candidates. But what about some of the rural counties are the Northwest Georgia counties, say, you know, Floyd, Polk, those counties down through there, David. What are you hearing from them about what they're doing about this?
Well, Tim, I do want to give you some credit. You, for a county of 25,000 to 30,000 folks, you probably are in the best financial shape of almost any county of that size. So you have the luxury of doing things that a lot of people couldn't do because you're still having a headquarters and doing phone banking and all those other things. I know Floyd is doing it. You know, they opened a headquarters on Broad Street, which is the main thoroughfare. That actually serves as a headquarters for some of the candidates. So that gives them that way. I know that, for instance, they're also they're doing, you know, getting together booths at fairs, printing materials. they're taking care of buying the Obama material for the area, that kind of stuff. And I know that stuff you're doing as well in your county. I mean, you're not skimping on anything because you're in such a position that you probably have as much money as a county like Floyd, and you have a fourth of the population, sir.
Right.
So
that's true. We do have a couple of big donors whom you know who they are, but of course I'm not going to embarrass them by naming them on here. But I was just wondering the role of the 159 counties in Georgia. Most of them do have Democratic organizations, and what they might be doing at the local level to address the shortfall of funding that obviously the state Democratic Party cannot provide, but that the Republican Party at the state level certainly does provide. It seems like a lot of money comes from the top down in the Republican Party, and it seems like in the Democratic Party in Georgia, it's at the opposite end of the spectrum, and the grassroots are having to not only burden or shoulder the burden of most of the work, but also most of the financial stuff, and it just is straining.
Well, following up on last week's little game we played, Catherine, last week we did five races in the South at Senate races you think will be most likely to flip. We won't put you on the spot for that one, but Tim identified a race, South Carolina, and since then we've seen new polling that shows that within a single-digit race, affirming Tim's prediction of South Carolina tightening up. And then I had mentioned Kentucky, which no one else had, and that is now a one-point race, according to Mason Dixon. And then that mirrors a recent SUSA poll, Survey USA poll, I'm doing the acronym, that showed that is a three-point race, with both polls having McConnell under the 50% number. So it looks like Tim and I were both clairvoyant in our picks that Tim will race are tightening up. But Tim, time has gotten away from us. Go ahead and do your outrage of the week.
Be glad to. Going to talk about something a little somber tonight, David. You know, 2002 seems like an awfully long time ago. The Democrats were, of course, still in charge then in Georgia, and it was to be the last year that they were. In that last year of Democratic rule, the voters were grumbling. They were angry about things like the state flag. The teachers were mad about tenure. The bankers were mad about Roy Barnes taking on Wall Street, which it turned out he was prophetic. And the Republicans were adding gasoline to the fire, talking about an abusive and incompetent state government. I heard your state senator, David Preston Smith, use those very words, and that was 6 years ago. Now, fast forward to this week. It was announced that the state public defender's office would have to accept a 6% operating budget decrease as part of the state's desperate attempt to address a shortfall that may eventually reach as much as $3 billion of a $21 billion state budget. Practically every state department will have to accept either a 6, 8, or 10% budget cut. Now think about that. Highway funds, agriculture funds, DOC funds, education funds, and every other funding for services for the people of Georgia, almost, that you can possibly think of, will be cut. And don't plan any trips, by the way, to any state parks unless you first check to see if they are open. It is rumored that some of those may have to close. And for you folks who like something like golf, well, don't depend on those state-owned courses to all be there. Some of them may have to go as well. Now, there's 14 technical colleges in Georgia. And it's now rumored that this number may be cut back to 7. So don't enroll until you find out if your local school might be on the chopping block. And if technical schools don't interest you much, then how about the road system? Hey, it's just a rumor, but rumor has it that the governor while facing huge cuts in the state transportation department, is actually looking into the construction of all new state roads and turning that over to private companies. Under this scheme, these companies would pay the state to do this, and just guess how they'd get their money back. Toll roads, of course. You and I would pay to drive on all of them. Does that sound like fun? And here's a goodie. Instead of the state collecting sales taxes, like they do in counties now, they might actually turn that over to a private company or to the local governments themselves. Now, they claim it would make local governments some money to do that, except they didn't mention one thing. Local governments would have to create an agency and hire people to do this, and your tax dollars would have to pay for it, so your local taxes would probably have to be increased. These Republicans inherited in January of 2003 a state with one of the best bond ratings in the nation. 5.5 years later, the Republicans have marched this state to the abyss of financial ruin. So when these state legislators who are Republican are running around right now and promising all of this good stuff this coming next January, if you'll only send them back to Atlanta, well, they're lying. They know better. When Katie Dempsey, David, down there in Floyd County, has these events that you've seen in the newspaper with the GOP leadership and talking about how wonderful things are, it's all a lie. When Jeff Mullis up here in Walker County, who's running against our guest, talks about how wonderful things are in Atlanta, well, he's lying too. And Casey Cagle, who presently is running as hard as he can for governor, and Glenn Richardson, that laughing stock of a House Speaker, yep, liars as well. The biggest liar, old Sonny himself, a do-nothing governor. History will render him so, I think. And just think, Karen Handel is running this election. Oh, gee, does it ever end, David.
Tim, you really have gotten, I think, ahead of the curve on that one, which is good. That's what we want to do, is have informative topics. Well, I'm going to take a little time to preview something I can't say a whole lot about. But around midweek, check the blogs. There should be information on how the kudzu vine may be going national a little bit. And Wednesday, we can tell all about that, but I can't say any more than just check around the Pondy's Tavern and Blog for Democracy. Well, Catherine, I know you're always busy with all kind of political stuff. What's on tap this week in the Atlanta area?
Well, I have just a couple things going on this week. Well, of course, we're continuing to try to promote the Don't Wait, No Wait activities, which is at don'twaitin08.com. And on Tuesday, we're Georgia for Democracy and WAND are pleased to be bringing author Diane Wilson, who's an environmental activist, to Atlanta for a book signing. So I'm looking forward to that. That's at the First Existentialist Congregation in Candler Park on Tuesday night. And then on Friday, if anybody wants to come out and help make buttons at Manuals on during happy hour, we'll be there from 6 to 9.
Excellent.
In the North Avenue room at Manuals.
Yeah, maybe you'll have some new templates for some new candidates by then.
We just might very well have that.
Yes, we'll just have to hear more about that. But, yeah, just another good show, and there's just so much it didn't seem like we're able to get to. We didn't even begin to try to explain the bailout crisis, which we see show after show. I mean, I know that everybody, I guess, gets the gist of people loaned out money without even beginning to check credit because they knew they were going to sell the loans off to the next guy anyway. I heard the short version that helped out, but that'll still be going on. I know one of our past guests, Travis Childers, he was responsible, stayed in Washington, canceled his political kickoff tour. Kudos to Travis for doing that, and I'm sure he's just one of many, but I just happened to see on his website that it said canceled on some of his kickoff events for this week. And more and more political news, and we'll review the vice presidential debate next week and have more guests. I have a feeling we can get Bob Puckett on soon as well on one of his next shows in October. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.